The following is a Kingfisher Studios podcast. You are listening to When the Bow Breaks with Alexis Erlin. This week, she talks with Jason Moore from Missionary Position Podcast, Mission Studio, and the hugely popular Podverse Podcast.
So I knew Jason through my fiance, actually, who does a podcast. They both did one together. Tell me a little bit about that podcast.
The Missionary Position?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Two guys just letting loose and talking about situations that we felt needed to be put out there without any political correctness behind it, so it could just be real, be right, and be out there.
Yeah, so I met you about a year ago through him. Mm-hmm. Because you guys are brothers, you're best friends, brothers, you're really close. And so I've gotten to know you a little bit, throughout this past year, but there's a few things, a few questions I have, and I'm really thankful that you were up for talking to me. I feel like it's one of those things that we don't often share with people around us.
Right.
Cause it's one of those taboo topics for some. So, I just wanted to say thank you for coming on the show, willing to talk about your estrangement.
Estrangements.
Estrangements, yes, plural, yes. So what's motivating you to talk about it now?
You asked me.
Yeah. No, like, so you want to tell people your story so they can gain something from it, right?
Well, my new goal in life is to teach from example, because I feel not enough people lead by example. So if I put my story out there, then a lot of people can see that it's been done. And maybe help them do it or give them another way that they can look at it.
Oh, sounds good. Do you have any siblings or is it just you and your family?
No, I have a sister.
You have a sister. Okay. How old, like how many years apart in age are you?
I'm 3 years older than she is.
Okay. So your estrangement story, this happened when you were fairly young, actually.
Yeah, really young.
So can you tell me, like, maybe just so people have a little bit of glimpse into what your life was like before, maybe if you go back like the day before it happened, maybe summarize what your life was like before the estrangement.
Well, there was a couple different situations. Before my sister was born, I was, of course, a pride and joy. You know, I remember very far back. I remember having fun. I remember laughing. I remember first day of school. I remember something changing. Now, I don't have an exact timeline, but I'm going to say probably about 6 months to a year before shit hit the fan. And we parted ways, I guess. Not that it was total choice, but there was a lot of what I felt were get up or shut up or get the fuck out.
Yeah.
Put up, shut up, or get out. There was a lot of fighting going on. There was a lot of arguing. There was a lot of pettiness. My mom caught my dad with a bag of weed and she flipped a nut. Big situation ensued. It was post breakup, after the breakup. You know, when couples break up, there's always hard feelings, and that's what happened. And I don't think anything was intentionally done. When it happened, I did. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of animosity for a lot of years. Nobody wanted me. Nobody loved me. Wah, wah, cry into my proverbial pillow because everybody hated me kind of scenario. And at a very young age, pre-10, I left and got picked up by the Children's Aid Society, brought back, sneaked out, ran away, all sorts of stuff, and then ended up downtown Toronto and the rest is history from there.
So you were under 10 and you left, you ran away, ran away from home several times.
Yeah.
Can I ask, like, I know you said it was like, what did you say? Put up, shut up, or get out, basically. So yeah, there was a lot of fighting. So you left.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you ended up on the streets of Toronto. That sounds like a kind of a big deal to somebody who's under 10. So could you paint a picture for me what that was like? What was it like for you when you left, like the day you left? Can you remember that? Can you talk about that?
I remember my mom and dad getting into a fight. I remember leaving, and I remember sitting by what at that time was a Becker's store on the corner of Fir Valley and Warden Avenue, wondering what I was going to do, where I was going to go, and of course crying, thinking all of this is my own fault, thinking, you know, somehow, because I'm the oldest child, I caused this. And just an intense feeling of, I don't know, like, what am I going to do? Scared shitless, crying. And I remember seeing a subway, and I thought, huh, I could get on the subway and just go. So that's what I did.
So you were obviously upset when you left. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, oh, yeah, bye, see ya. I don't care about you anymore. You were obviously, like, hurting.
Right.
What was your relationship with your parents like? Like, for example, like, what was your relationship like between you and your mom to start?
Well, now I don't doubt that my mom loved me, but back then I didn't feel like it was there. And my dad was a totally different person as well back then, and he was violent, and I felt like between the two of them not loving me because my sister was there, and the big fight going on, like it's all my fault. Mm. You know, I put the whole weight of the whole world, or what at that time was my whole world, on my shoulders, and we were never getting along, and I remember getting in an argument with my mom, and what I remember is her telling me, well, if you don't like the way the house runs, just get the F out. So.
Did you feel like you were positively servicing them by leaving?
Yes. I thought if I wasn't going to be there, they might have a chance.
So what was your, can you remember pre-estrangement? What was, like, your happiest childhood memory? Do you have one that really sticks out to you? It doesn't even have to include your parents, but, you know.
We went to Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. My dad had an old Ford van, flat-nosed Ford van, and we drove down stateside, and we went down, and one of my big things on Canadian television at the time, you couldn't get it in Canada, was Cookie Crisp cereal. It was right. Only available in the States.
Right.
It had the little wizard, and they were, I don't know, magically delicious or something silly like
that. It was Cookie Crisp, I think. Or something like that.
We went to Philadelphia, and we saw the Bell and all that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, it was a fantastic time. Happiest time. I was sitting in the back of my dad's van eating Cookie Crisp cereal. And it was fantastic, and my dad was so happy that he got it for us.
That sounds like a nice memory.
Yeah, it is.
So, did your parents ever teach you anything that empowered you to be able to feel like you could live without them? Because I know you left, but it's like, did you feel equipped to leave?
No. No, I thought I was going to die.
Right, I would have, I think, if I was 10 and on most my
of
own.
The, yeah. Most of the lessons I learned from getting my teeth kicked in.
So what were some of those questions that you had, like, about your survival? Like, your daily questions? Like, you said you thought you were going to die, but it's like...
Because I didn't know where I was going to sleep.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about hostels and street places you could go to sleep and street kitchens where you go in and you have a meal.
Yeah.
So I didn't know where I was going to sleep. I didn't know where I was going to eat. I didn't know if there was anybody that was going to help me. I didn't know if somebody was going to kidnap me and rape me and kill me. I had no idea. The only thing I was sure of in my head was I couldn't go home and I was probably going to die.
So what do you think would have happened if you would have went home? Do you think that you would have been severely punished, or that life would have gone on the way it had before and you just didn't want that?
I think at first, if I had gone home, I think I would have been severely punished for screwing off and them worrying about me and, you know.
Yeah.
I do remember the first time I went back, we were still living on Cataraqui. That's a street in Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
I lived at 100 Cataraqui, and...
How old were you when you went back?
Seven.
Seven?
Yeah.
So you were how old when you left?
Seven.
Okay.
Yeah. So the first time I went back was like 2.5 weeks, and it was because the Children's Aid Society found me and they took me back.
I have a really hard time imagining that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember when I was 7 years old wanting to run away, but I don't think I would have got very far just because of my fear. So, mm-hmm. So how did you take those next steps into a world you were really not familiar with that
Well,
you know,
first,
scared you?
I was caught in a conundrum because not only did I think if I left, they'd get back together, I didn't really feel like I was wanted. You know, and I don't think anything was deliberate.
Yeah.
Now, as an sure. adult and having worked through it. But back then, I thought, they don't want me. They've got my sister now. So, this is why all the fighting is going on. And they're trying to decide what to do with me. And, you know, because not that parents do it on purpose, but a lot of the time in arguments, kids come up, you know, shit's thrown back and forth. And
sure.
I wasn't a stupid kid and I heard a lot. And I put what in my head made sense, 2 and 2 equals 4.
Mm-hmm.
And... yeah, that's when I left, and that's why I felt like I couldn't go back. So
you went back again when you were...
A few weeks out.
A few weeks out, okay.
Right, I got picked up by the Children's Aid Society.
Right.
And my dad was living there still. And I snuck back in, went through the back door, and I remember him freaking out on me, wondering where I was, being told, I'm glad your mom's not here, because if she was here, she would have died because we didn't know where you were, and calling the Children's Aid Society, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I felt really guilty, but I didn't completely feel welcome. You know, not because he didn't make me feel welcome, but the person he was back then was totally different than who he is now.
Right. So obviously your desire to leave was stronger than your desire to stay.
Correct.
Was there anything that you missed about your home when you were away? Because you did go back. I mean, why did you go back?
Because the Children's Aid Society.
That's right. They brought you back.
They brought
that's
me
right.
back.
They forced
I
you
didn't
back.
Really have okay. a choice.
Edit that out. But,
And part of the reason why I didn't go back on my own was because I was afraid to.
Right. Sure. Out of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Were there things that you did miss about home that you want, that you wish you could have had without all the other stuff?
Well, I missed my sister. Of course, I missed my parents, but that was kind of subsided by them not really wanting me. So I would start missing them, but then I'd get sad because they didn't want me.
Right.
So it was like a whirlwind. And, you know, I think my dad tried to show me that, you know, don't do this again in his way. It was out of anger. And I didn't feel like it was a, it's okay, I love you, stay, you're going to be safe. It was a, if you leave again, I'm going to break your face.
Yeah.
Right. And I thought, well, this time if I leave, I can't come back. And I don't really want to be here because you'll find another reason to break my face.
Yeah. So they brought you back, Children's Aid Society brought you back, and then you left again. How long was it?
Couple weeks.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How long had it been since you saw your parents after leaving again?
When I finally, well, I was, there was, this is one of the times where it's kind of mixed up because mm-hmm. it doesn't exactly track in my head.
Sure.
But it was a certain amount of time mm-hmm. between when my mom moved out and when we quote unquote moved in with my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 days or so, I'm guesstimating here because it could have been a day.
Mm-hmm.
I came back. And nothing was really said because I was still somewhat, you know, while I came back for the 2 weeks, I went back to Warden Avenue Public School and tried to work through stuff. And then I'd leave and then I'd come back and try to work through more stuff. But my idea of working through stuff wasn't the same to what most people, you know, you got to fight with your parents, you got to work with that, and you got to go it on your head. Mine was fighting to find a reason to stay, finding a reason to do.
Mm-hmm.
And when I wasn't at my parents' place, I was at a place on Girard, but it was a youth center called Beat the Street, and they did school there, and they helped you learn, and you put your name in through the Board of Education, and they work with you to get your education back.
Okay.
And a lot of times that's where I went, Okay. And I got close to who at that time became my street father.
Uh-huh.
His name is Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a teacher at Beat the Street.
Okay.
And so between there and going home, every time I went home, so after my mom took us, she moved up to Kennedy Road, and I stayed there for a while. Then I left and I stayed and I left and I stayed. And there was a breaking point for me when I was young. I had a friend of mine named Peter Pepin, or Darren Pepin, sorry. And he lived across the street in another building. And whenever I came back, him and I would always hang out. And that made it easier to stay for a little bit longer time. Mm-hmm. But still fighting went on with my mom and her roommate, Diane. And what made it really hard for me to stay there finally was my friend across the street. We went to, or he went to a place where I was supposed to do a drug deal that was arranged from downtown Toronto and on McCowan. And I couldn't go. I don't remember what exactly was going on, but something stopped me and I couldn't go. And he went, never made the drop, but he got found in a garbage bag, cut up into pieces about a week and a half, 2 weeks later.
Oh, Jesus.
So I lost my crap. And at that point, it's, you know, things weren't going well with my mom. I felt very, not envious, but definitely jealous of my sister, because it felt like my sister got all the attention. My test sister got all the good attention. My sister, because I was always getting in trouble for leaving and staying and, you know, why aren't you going and why are you going and back and forth, back and forth. And, right after this issue with Darren happened, my mom and I got in a fight in the living room. And at this time, she had gotten violent, physically violent, not just mentally.
And remind me, how old again were you at this time? Around, buddy.
I want to say 84-ish.
And
so I'd be about 14.
14, okay. I was going to say seven's a little young for drug dealing, having their friends showing up in body bags. But even 14, I mean, that's insane.
Right.
So, yeah. So, a lot of going back and forth. So, the drug deal didn't work. Your mom was getting, you were getting into a fight with your mom. Right. She started getting physical. So, then what happened?
So, I went to leave. She didn't want me to leave. And she grabbed me. And I had enough. I lost my shit. And she had me on the crooks of my arm like this, telling me, you can't go, you can't go. And so I put my hands on the back of her elbows and I started to squeeze her arms into mine and said, you don't want to fucking let me go? You don't want to effing let me go? Fine. This is what's going to happen. You want to keep doing this? This is what's going to happen. And I was squeezing harder and harder and harder. And I was so freaking mad. And then she got mad at me for hurting her.
After she'd been physical with you.
A few times.
And you just tried to leave.
And it's not like she beat me up, but it was like a smack in the head here, or, you know, verbally beat the shit out of me into the couch. And,
yeah,
you know.
Like an occasional brawl.
Right.
Right, yeah.
Her and I never got into a, like, fisticuff fighting.
Yeah.
But there was always pushing. Always, no, you're not going anywhere. Push me from the middle of the chest, or, you know, nothing, like, not battery.
Right. No, I know what you mean.
Okay.
Intimidation and not like a whole lot of physical harm, but definitely like abusive and
right. And calling down my character, and right. Which is part of why I felt like my sister was always a good one and I was always a bad one.
Right. So you said that there was this guy, Peter, who mm-hmm. helped you in school. Because that was another question that I had for you, was how did you, you know, continue your education when you were living on the streets. You'd mentioned this teacher
mm-hmm.
Who worked with Beat the Streets.
Right.
So other than your academics, was there anyone else who was a support to you? I know that, you know, you lost your friend and right. that was like a big deal for you. And that was one of the reasons that kind of was made it easier for you to stay.
Mm-hmm. No, that made it easier for me to stay away.
Stay away. Okay.
Right, because after that is when I got in the fight with my mom.
Okay.
Because I was done. I wanted out of there. I was finished. I just found out he had died and...
Okay. So you left again at 14.
Mm-hmm. Well, I left quite a few times before that as well. It
right.
wasn't a one-time scenario.
Right. Sure. But again, you're gone.
And I built up that street family. Like, I had friends Psycho and Spider, and one guy that worked at the Evergreens, his name was Sam. And he hooked, while I was on the streets, just a quick little side note, while I was on the streets, he hooked me up with a gentleman, and we made a movie for Ryerson College about the squats and how street people live in Toronto.
Okay.
And it's still out there somewhere, and I want to find it. Oh, so yeah. If anybody that hears this knows of that movie, yeah, send an email.
Yeah, good shout out. I would like to see it too. So you did have friends. You obviously had, like, you know, your street crew of people that you had support. So you
weren't an adult. His name was Sam that worked at the Evergreen.
Okay. The Evergreen was?
The Evergreen at this time was a drop-in center on Yonge Street, right above Dundas, between Dundas and Girard.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the Evergreen is.
It's a drop-in center for youth.
Oh, for youth. Okay. Right. Okay. That's good to know.
Well, it was. Now it's offices.
Okay. So during this time, did you ever wonder what was really going through your parents' head when you were gone? Because, nope. I mean,
I didn't care.
Yeah, because when you were there, it just seemed like the same old stuff. Yeah. So,
and, you know, a lot of it was the drink.
Yeah.
I like to drink a little bit too much, so it caused issues. And, well, it wasn't always the drink, but it definitely led to the situation.
Were there people in your life who you could have a conversation with, you know, like, you know, when you're getting older, like, for example, when you're interested in girls, or, you know, if you have, like, some big change going on in your life, did you have anyone that was basically like a parent role in your life that could help answer some of those questions for you or help you navigate? Not really.
No. Like, I talked to Peter, who was consistently in my life through my whole street situation.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the stuff that I learned was from my crew.
Right.
Psycho and Spider, and, you know, obviously it wasn't what my parents would have taught me. But right. Get it in there.
Yeah.
Cover it, put it in, get out, leave.
So what sort of things did they teach you that you still find beneficial, like, in your life today?
My crew?
Mm-hmm. I know that's probably a different context, but
because
I still think it matters. But
a lot of what I learned from them I can't use today unless something happened to my family.
right.
You know, one thing I think that is definitely a benefit is with this corona stuff going on. Mm-hmm. With my years of survival techniques, I don't think it would be hard for me to kick it back in.
Yeah. There you go. Well, that's something. Yeah, sometimes even if all we learn from something is how to survive, sometimes that's enough.
Mm-hmm. I honestly think I have a better chance than most if it came down to that kind of scenario.
Yeah. You could probably teach others, you know.
Or teach them to stay on my way.
Yeah, right.
You are listening to When the Bow Breaks. Like, subscribe, and share.
So, yeah, in and out of house, growing up on the streets, basically, on your own, not having any sort of parental guidance.
Well, and just to be clear so people understand, I wasn't, like, consistently downtown.
Sure.
I was at home. I did get picked up by the CAS, which is the Canadian Children's Aid Society.
Uh-huh.
Get put in foster home sometimes. I got put in juvie hall.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't get a hold of a parent, so, yeah, I spent, like, a couple nights in juvie hall.
Right.
So it wasn't like I was just, okay, well, he's 7 years old, now he's downtown, and how do you survive downtown? Well, it's not that easy. It's not that laid out. It's not like,
yeah.
Don't paint this with one brushstroke,
right.
Because
it's
multiple brushstrokes for every single person that's been through it.
Right. You've had no consistency, so there's been a lot of different things that you've had to experience and deal with.
Correct.
You know, even at once, I imagine. So, knowing what you know now as an adult, if you were to go back to your younger self on the day you left home, what would you say?
I wouldn't.
Okay.
I wouldn't say anything. I would just watch.
Yeah. That's interesting. because I've asked myself that question. And mm-hmm. sometimes I do have something to say, and other times I'm like, oh, I'm not even going to address that. It's better if she just experiences that on her own, for herself. Is that how you feel, or I'm is like, it just...
Well, in all seriousness, I might sit down and, well, younger me is sitting there having a cigarette, you know, sit down and just idly chat about what's going on and how things are and hear life at that time from my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know what it would be like in my head.
Yeah.
But I'm more interested in what I might have said to me if I were the kid talking to me and not knowing I'm me.
What would you say, do you think?
I don't know. It depends what point in my life I sat down with me.
So, like, 7.
This really fits into my, like, MPD
syndrome. Yeah, no, like, this interests me because sometimes people don't really think of that, and I think that it brings good questions.
At 7, I don't think I would have said anything because I was too afraid to talk to anybody.
Mm, and yeah.
When I was... And this legit happened when I was 7 years old. I went to a place, it was called Covenant House at that time, under 21.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in Toronto. I don't think it was anywhere else in Canada yet. It started in Toronto. And, or from what I can remember anyways. And everybody was telling me to go there, and I couldn't find out where it was. And I remember walking down Carleton towards Jarvis, because there's a park there called Allen Gardens. I crossed the street, went into Allen Gardens, and I met this guy named Gypsy, and he went all kinds of stupid. So eventually, about like 3 days after that, I went back to the park thinking everything was okay. And a man, honestly, probably 40 years old, obviously did time. This Jesse guy told him that I was a rat. And this guy, with me at 7 years old, this guy grabbed me by my hair and kicked me in my face. I had a big-ass boot mark on the side of my face.
Oh, my God.
And an older lady came up to me and asked me, oh, my, what happened, blah, 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 you're just a child, blah, blah. And she started swearing at the guy, and she asked me where I was going. I said, I'm trying to find Covenant House. And that's how I found Covenant House. She took me there.
Oh, wow. You had to get kicked in the head to find it.
Yeah, and sometimes, like, that happened a lot throughout my life. Not physical kicking the head, but you know, a lot of times I need to be kicking the head to learn a lesson.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So obviously there were times when you were taken advantage of and you were hurt.
Right.
How often would you say that happened?
Oh, for the first half dozen years, I'd say all the time. Consistently.
Sure. As you were learning. And
when I finally fought back, I was probably 11, 12-ish, and I had using a cane because I thought it was cool at the time. And a guy tried to rape me in the atrium of the Evergreen, or of the Allen Gardens. There's an atrium in there that has exotic flowers in there.
Uh-huh.
And I used to go in there and just think and cry. That was where I released because I didn't know what to do anything else.
Yeah.
And he tried to rape me in there. And I split his head open with my cane because I hit him like, I don't know how many times. I was just so scared. I just started hitting him and I couldn't stop. I just started hitting him and hitting him and hitting him with my cane. And that's the first time I really fought back and made a difference. Like, I tried to fight back before and got my ass whooped.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was the first time I really fought back and made a difference and felt like I had some kind of power over where I was going.
Yeah.
That's like 4 years of street life,
yeah,
on and off, not feeling powerless on the streets and feeling powerless at home, and finally to have that, oh yeah.
No, I know what it's like to feel powerless, like when you're that age, mm-hmm. and constantly just fighting just for your own friggin' bubble, like just to stay intact.
Right.
So now my questions are like, how long this could go on. I mean, I'm sure you have hundreds of stories of your life on the streets. You obviously survived.
And that's another show.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right. My question now is, as an adult, how did your estrangement play out as an adult? Like, because as an adult, you know, you had freedom to go back and forth. Nobody was going to be hunting you down anymore.
When I became a legal adult, and I consider a legal adult like 1920.
Yeah.
Because you can drink.
Right, yeah.
You can drive legally at 16, which I started driving way before that. But
sure.
Something about when I turned 19, flipped my head. I had a wealth of fighting experience under my belt, so I felt I was no longer that weak little moron that was present 8-9 years ago. But I found in my head this need to get out. I needed to get out. I had this conflict inside. Either I'm going to die in prison, or I'm going to OD and die in a ditch. So if I don't get up and get out now on my own, there isn't a future for me. And one person that also helped me out was a gentleman by the name of Sam that worked at the Evergreen. And he was somewhat of a confidant for me. There were certain things I couldn't tell him because legal restrictions, he would have to report me.
Right.
But emotional stuff, working through stuff, he was phenomenal, him and Peter. And between the two of them, we came up with a plan for me to leave Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1990, before my 20th birthday, we came up with a plan and saved up some cash from doing, quote, jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And then September, I think it was. So it was after my birthday. It could have been June, July, August, September. Statute of limitations is up now. So I worked and did a welfare check and got myself a little sum. Bought myself a car. Needed money for gas to go across Canada. Had a little bit of mechanical experience, so I knew what I was looking at. And stole some license plates, put it on my car so it looked legal, and left. I drove out of Toronto and stopped off at my grandma's house, said goodbye. I had a young lady with me at the time and my dog. Left. Hit the 401 and headed west.
So when did you reconnect with your parents again?
Well, I had some connection real early because my daughter was born,
mm-hmm.
and my mom came out, and nothing was said about the past. It was just, hey, how you doing? Yeah, I'm alive. Look, you got a good granddaughter. She came out. Just before that, she came out once to visit, and we went to Calgary with the Calgary Stampede.
Oh, okay.
So we drove all the way across from BC to Calgary in a Sprint. So there's all 6'1" of me crumpled up in the back of a Sprint because my grandma had the front passenger seat. My mom drove.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, she didn't even let me drive, and I had my license. You know, I had to be the, look at me, I'm all in charge now, and I've got my head on straight, and I bought her, like, I won her a stuffed animal and all this kind of stuff. And so we drove back in the Sprint, and now all 6'1" of me is in that little 3-foot square confined space with a 3-foot unicorn, stuffed unicorn. We drove back, but nothing about the past was brought up. Mm-hmm. Nothing about why did you leave. Nothing. It was just now we're just visiting as adults.
Was that weird?
Oh, very. Yeah, it was really hard to not throw a temper tantrum, actually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, be that 7-year-old kid and just let loose.
Yeah.
And I at the time was trying to practice, you know, what's in the past. And it's about me being a dad now, because my ex was pregnant at the time. And then she went home, came back 4 or 5 months after my daughter was born, visited. So we stayed in periodic contact, like calling here and there, but I didn't contact with my dad until like 2013, 23 years later. And, so I would be in periodic contact with my mom. My daughter went out and visited and had a great time in 2013. I connected with my dad and I searched and scoured and found his phone number and called him and had a 3.5-hour conversation. And out of it came a renewed relationship. He put himself through anger management. He went back to school as an mature adult.
Wow.
Took sorts of courses and got his head on straight and lost a lot of his anger. Worked through a lot of it. So he didn't carry it anymore. And he told me that he wished he was half the man I am so he could be half the father I am to my kids.
Wow.
Yeah. Because he saw what was going on in Facebook and how great my kids are and how much I love my kids and how much things work. And one thing, so your question earlier, what's the one thing that I learned from there? What I didn't know until my children were born, but what I learned was how I did not want to be with my children. And I didn't know it until my child was born, but that's what I learned from the streets.
So, years go by. Your dad obviously did some work on his own personal, self-development.
A shit ton. Oh, yeah. Totally different human being and such an amazing human being.
Those stories really amaze me because there's so many stories where I hear it just gets worse and worse, mm-hmm. which is, it's really sad. But then I hear stories like this where it just kind of turns around and it makes me feel good, especially knowing everything that you've gone through. I feel like it wasn't all for nothing,
Right. Well, obviously I had to go through it. It was my path. I don't believe in destiny and I don't believe in God and all that kind of stuff, but I do believe that me as a human being needed to have this as some kind of existence. So I had what I needed to change for my children, to make that difference.
Hmm.
Now, it wasn't only my dad that changed. My mom did as well. Mm-hmm. And though for many years, not as soon as my dad, but, many years after my dad and I reconnected, my mom and I still talked. And we still worked through stuff, but we still had our arguments. We still never came to grips with each other's self. She mm-hmm. didn't come to grips with her, and I didn't come to grips with me for mm-hmm. many years. So there was mm-hmm. a lot of back and forth, F you kind of conversations we had. And recently we had a coming out
mm-hmm.
where she confronted my drug addiction and realized that it was real. All these years convincing herself that I was full of shit, that what I was saying was make-believe. I personally think it was because she could not allow herself to be that person in her own eyes
mm-hmm.
because she didn't see that person.
Right.
She's living in the moment. She never saw that person.
Yeah.
She never experienced what I experienced because she believed she was doing what she needed to do to be a good mom. And we all have our own views and visions, and sometimes we can't see clearly. And honestly, up until recently, for a long, long time, I did not like my mother very much. And up until a couple years ago, we really started connecting. And she realized that what I was telling her about my addiction and what happened to me downtown wasn't made up.
Mm-hmm.
She just had to convince herself that it was. And now we talk freely about it and she's open about it. And
she's accepted it as right. truth.
Yeah. And now, again, she's on the same path, in the path of growth. And she's becoming a great person and she's got a good relationship with my kids. And what more out of the kind of situation I grew up with could I ask for?
So as a dad, how does your parenting style differ from your parents? And are there also similarities?
So not everything was bad. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of angst in me. Not only did I feel like I was put in a position where I couldn't go back, I kind of felt like it was a 50-50 decision. Yeah, I wanted to leave,
mm-hmm.
but they wanted me out.
Right.
And I made sure from that never to put my children in that kind of a position.
Mm-hmm.
So I developed a way with my children that I taught them 100% differentiation between self and action.
Mm-hmm.
So when I gave my kids trouble for doing something, at the time, I did believe in corporal punishment. I smacked them on the ass. Absolutely, I did. And I put them in the corner. But afterwards, I taught them that just because you stole money out of the jar doesn't mean that you're a bad person. Mm-hmm. Dylan has a beautiful heart, great love for people, but your actions sucked, which grew into, I would look at my kids and I would, when after they got trouble, I'd look at them and I'd say, I don't always. And they'd say, like my actions. Then I'd say, but I do always. And they say, love me. And we could, they could have just got shit. And every time they said, love me, this smile grew on their face. So I had to make sure that they understood the difference between their actions and their person. It was huge for me not to intertwine the two. Mm-hmm. Another branch that came off from that was always talking. Always, always talking. Whenever they did something wrong or something right. Mm-hmm. So if they did something wrong, after they got disciplined, we sat down and we talked about it. Why did that happen?
Yeah.
What came out of you doing something wrong? And then a week later, we talked about, well, why did that good thing happen? And what came out of that being good? Then we'd compare the two. And it would allow us to grow as a family and bond. And the bond between siblings is usually strong. But the bond between a parent, usually children pick a parent and there's a strong bond with one parent. But there's still a bond with the other. The differentiation in my situation is the bond, the true bond, is between the two of them. I cultured that like a pearl, and I made sure that they always came out where they were on the same ground. Like, they had their sibling rivalries and back and forth and crap. But when push really came to shove, I always brought out the example about, look at how you're sticking up for your sister. Look at how you're sticking up for your brother. Look how tight you two are. And I cultured that. And now they love each other more than they love me. And that's deliberate, because I will go before they do, hopefully. Which means they'll still have each other. And the bond that can be lifetime can grow between them, because they'll have a longer life together than I will with them. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
Oh, and I want to add, I don't doubt their love for me. I know they tell me every opportunity they have how much they love me, how much they're thankful that I'm here. And even after now, my boy does it, Dylan. When he gets in trouble, because he's going through a rough spot right now, when he gets in trouble, we'll get into an argument. And he'll go to stomp off, go upstairs, go to bed. But he'll stop, he'll come back down, he'll give me a hug and says, but you remember I love you, right? Mm. Because that's how he was brought up.
Yeah. That's good. So again, just as we kind of like, I guess, wrap this up.
Oh, sex time. Usually I'm only wrapping things up when I'm about to have sex.
So tell me again, why did you want to share this story?
Because I also, now having gone through it with you, something else has come to my mind that I want people that are out there that are estranged to realize, even from the most worst scenarios that are out there, something can come of it. Don't give up. Sitting back on your laurels because, look at me, I'm better than my parents were, is no better than what they did to you. Mm-hmm. So maybe we, and I'm not going to use victims because I don't agree with labels. It's a situation that happened. I was never a victim. It was a situation that happened. I don't blame anybody for what happened except myself for taking the actions I took. Mm-hmm. Even when I was young, my parents, yeah, they could have fought to keep me there and that kind of stuff, but they had their own crap going on.
Right.
So I'm not putting that in their bed. But you have to understand that maybe you can get off your butt and make the difference. You can start to rekindle that which was broken. I'm not saying that for everybody. I know there are some situations where people just can't go back there, and I understand that. But maybe even if there's a little bit that can, just a high and a coffee. It doesn't have to be, you're my mom, so I love you, blah, blah. No, it doesn't have to be, you're my dad, so I respect you. None of that stuff. Mm-hmm. It can just be, well, let's see if we can work on an adult level.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter how bad it can get. I'm living proof that it can change. Mm. That you don't have to be that piece of crap you were when you were 16 years old, hurting people for a living.
Mm. So what would you like anyone listening, what would you hope that they would gain from your story?
Well, though it's a unique story, maybe some personal insight, maybe something that happened to me later in life or early in life rubs off and a little spark triggers and they see, oh, I could do that. Because there's been a lot of changing that's been going on. I've grown. Hell, in the last 2 years, I've grown. If I can do this from a statistic, because for 14 years, I was pretty much a number. Mm-hmm. In and out of Children's Aid Society, in and out of jail, busted, doing coke, just being an absolute piece of crap. And I don't know what to say, because I don't believe in God, but for whatever faith you guys have out there that are listening to this, with anything that you guys would hold, like God or whatever, it doesn't matter how bad the situation is. It doesn't matter what kind of piece of crap you think you are as a person. You can make a difference and you can change your reality.
You can change your reality. Yeah. I found that true.
Mm-hmm. My dad was an absolute piece of crap. He really was. He was biker, Paradise Riders. Pretty badass kind of guy. My mom was tougher than my dad. I don't know if that's actually true, but when the smacks in the head made me feel like it. But he did a 360 at 50 years old.
Yeah.
Well, or 30 or however old he was
when he started. Yeah.
But, you know, later in life, it wasn't like he was a 25-year-old punk. He was later in life, 30, 40 years old, I think. And he made the change. He became a better person. He's a phenomenal human being. I love talking to that man.
Yeah.
And for somebody who was such a badass and couldn't really, at the time, show love appropriately, I think. He tells people, I adopt in my family that he loves them. He tells me consistently after we talk, oh, tell Tony I love him. Absolutely. That's how conversations, I have copied and showed him. You know, we've had a chat on Facebook and he said, oh, don't forget to tell Tony I love him. And I've showed him. And this man came from somebody who was a really bad person, a really violent person, not necessarily a bad person. Like, he wasn't in jail, I don't think, but he was a really violent person and he changed into this warm, caring, loving human being.
So I guess it's safe to say that not only you can change your reality, but I guess we can have some sort of faith that others will be taking the steps to change theirs as well.
Or maybe feel like, oh, maybe I can. Even just putting that little seed in there that maybe I can change it. Because there's a lot of people out there that feel, oh, I can't change. Yeah. I'm who I am.
Right.
I'm 50 years old now. Or, well, I'm not quite 50 yet. I'm going to be 50 in this, so I'm only 49. But I'm still changing. I'm still being, I will be a better person tomorrow than I am today. Because of lessons I've learned from other people. My dad being one of the primaries. Because if he can change, you know, I was on my way to changing, but I wasn't, like, by any means any much better of a person. I played one for my kids.
Sure.
So I wasn't getting in trouble as much. But I, at that time, I wasn't doing it for me. I was doing it for them. And my sister wasn't really in the picture. They talked, but, like, she wasn't really in the picture. I wasn't really in the picture. So who did he change for? He changed for him. And what I learned from that was, wait a minute, I got to change. But I got to change for me. I don't got to change because my mom wants to see a different person. I don't want to change because my dad changed, so I might as well. No, no. I have to change because I, inside my heart of hearts, want to be a better person. I want to be the person that my kids love. I want to be the person. So in changing, being real and carrying myself 100% with my children, because I never bullcrap my children. If they asked a question, I figured they were old enough to know the answer. So I gave it to them straight. I never played games with my kids. I don't care if they were 7 or 17. And the person that they love, being me, is the person that they love. There's not, it's not dad. They were allowed to call me Jason. And they knew everything about me, the person. I didn't hide anything. My lifestyle, I didn't, my anger, I didn't hide what I thought. If they didn't like something, I didn't candy coat it. And, well, but it'll be okay next time. No, you're a dumbass and you did this. Now you got to pay a freaking natural consequence. Yeah. Don't complain to me because you're a butthead. Right. And I never softened their blows. I let them live their lives. I let them make their mistakes. And I'm still doing the same thing because I did not have children so I could have somebody to control.
Right.
I had children because I always wanted to be a dad because I wanted to have somebody I could love, because that's not the way I thought I was only ever going to have somebody in my life that I could love.
Mm.
And as my ex-partner will attest to, we didn't have love for each other. We thought we did, but we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And though she was a, in my opinion at the time, like she's changed now, mm-hmm. but at the time she was a piece of crap person, wasn't a very good mom, wasn't in my kid's life or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to tell you, I love that woman because she gave me something nobody else in the world ever could.
Mm.
And that's my kids.
Mm.
And I do thank her for that whenever I see her. And I make sure she understands how important she is to my life because of what she gave me, regardless. And so I never talk bad about her to my kids.
Mm-hmm.
I never, oh, your piece of crap mom did this, blah, blah, blah. That never happened.
Mm-hmm.
It was always a, well, she's in a position right now where that can't happen. So, you know, when you're old enough, you can make the choice and go find out for yourself where you want to be with her. And both of them know exactly where they want to be with her. And that's their choice to make. That was never weighed by anything I said.
Yeah. So I know you kind of touched on it. And I know that you know the answer to this, but do you understand your parents better now than you did when you were going through all that, when you were
a young person? No.
Okay.
I know who my parents are now
mm-hmm.
because they are different human beings than they were then. Like, they literally changed who they were from mm-hmm. then to now. So I will never understand the people they were when I was young.
Mm.
But I really am liking who they are now.
Mm. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the now is really what matters.
Well, if you dwell in the past, you'll live in it, right?
Right. Well, I think it's been a great episode. I don't know. What do you think?
I think it was a lot of fun. It was nice to put it out there so people can hear it. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for this opportunity.
You're welcome. Again, this is Alexis Aralin with WTBB Podcast. You can send us an email at WTBBpodcast@gmail.com. And thank you for listening to When the Bow Breaks. Again, our guest is Jason Moore. Take a look or take a listen to his podcast, Podverse.
www.pod-verse.com.
Awesome. We'll see you guys next time.
Thank you for listening. The hosts and guests of this podcast present personal opinions and should not be regarded as therapists or mental health professionals. Views expressed by the guests are their own and do not represent the views of the hosts, When the Bow Breaks podcast, or Kingfisher Studios. Listeners are encouraged to support the show by following on social media, reaching out via email, and leaving a positive review wherever they find this podcast.